When you look at police engagement in black communities, the concept of protect and serve seems to have been replaced by, too many at least, with, well, aim and shoot. Reactions to police shootings rather than apprehensions and arrests have ranged from finger-pointing to even justifying. According to my next guest, none of those are a path to a solution. With us now to explore this serious issue within both the black as well as police communities is a law enforcement expert who's worked with numerous police departments as well as the FBI National Academy on improving relationships between police forces and the communities that the, here's the key word, are to serve. He's also authored the book, The Stop. Say good morning to Dwayne Bryant. How are you today, Dwayne?
Chris, good morning, my friend. I am fantastic. How are you?
Well, it's good to have you here to talk about this issue because I think you are one of those people who are making a difference. DwayneBryant.com, aboutthestop.com. We have those links at our homepage, so you do have them there for your easy reference. I have to make a mention, too, Dwayne, you are based in Memphis. And when we say Memphis, police and shootings, that brings about, well, a recent case which brought about a twist to how people look at this because race had always been the go-to in the argument regarding police and conflicts in the black community, but these cops are black.
Yeah, absolutely. They all were black that were indicted and a couple others as well. So then that goes to show you that it's not just about race, but it's about training. It's about the systemic culture. It is about the pattern, the practices within law enforcement. And those are the things that need to be addressed. It's also about accountability and hiring practices, because when we look at one of the officers, this was not his first rodeo with putting his hands and using excessive force on individuals. So there's a lot that needs to be talked about, discussed, as well as transformed within law enforcement.
I want to do a compare and contrast. You can take, and we've talked about here on the show, and I've done timelines repeatedly of the individual cases from Breonna Taylor to George Floyd. So we know what those situations are. They're very visible. Here's one you might not have caught. A former Trump 2016 campaign official, Brad Pascal. He was white. Police were told he was suicidal. He was walking around the street waving a gun around. You would think, okay, if Brad was black, I think we know what would have happened. In this case, though, he wasn't shot. He was consoled. He was had conversations back and forth with police for hours until they got him down off the emotional ledge. That brings to mind maybe that you might recall the instance in Rochester, New York, where a mentally troubled black man was doing a similar thing in the middle of the street. He was shot.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's other examples. In Miami, Florida, there was a black guy who was literally a counselor for a white boy who was, he had some type of issue. I don't know what it was, but he had a mental challenge. The black guy was in the street trying to console him. The little white kid had some kind of toy gun or whatever. The black man is the one who got shot by Miami SWAT. Now, SWAT is supposed to be a whole lot more elite than the regular police department. We can go on and on with different stories. The gentleman, the white boy in Kenosha, Wisconsin, he had literally just shot someone, leaving the scene with the AR-15, walking by the police officers who were driving past him. No one stopped him. He gets caught in another city. We can go to Dylan Roof in South Carolina, who just killed 9 people in church.
Yep.
Got picked up, taken to McDonald's. I think it was a Whopper fries and maybe a little soft drink that he was able to get. So if anyone in America thinks that police officers treat black people the same as they do white folk or other folk, then they intentionally desire not to be a truth teller.
Now let's take things, just to be fair here, devil's advocate's probably my middle name.
I love it.
Let's look at the black communities, because what is often said whenever one of these instances, one of these tragedies happen, well, if they would just submit, all of this could have been avoided.
Correct. Well, once again, you know, it's so shameful that there's so many instances that we could talk about submission. Philando Castile submitted, told the police officer, Geronimo, hey, man, I have my conceal and carry. I do have a firearm. He said, okay, well, take it out, give it to me. He was slowly reaching forward and got executed right there in the car. So complying is not only the sole source. Elijah McClain, the the young man out in, I think it was Colorado, complying, still got killed. Botham Jean, sitting in his own home eating ice cream while black, still got killed. So that argument doesn't hold either.
Oh, Dwayne Bryant, a law enforcement expert. He's been a consultant, a teacher to police forces across the country. Also, author of the book, The Stop, DwayneBryant.com, about TheStop.com. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. How much of a responsibility falls on the police for the wall that exists between them and the community they serve? You think back in the old days, the police were a part of the community through public events, simply walking a beat, meeting and talking with people. It just seems that the steps into a reconnection are not being taken.
Yeah, absolutely. So your question was what level of responsibility? First of all, I say both police and community have a responsibility. And believe it or not, sometimes when I say this, some in the black community get upset with me because I said, no, police are not the only people responsible for ensuring calm, for ensuring that there's mutual respect, shared responsibility, and accountability. However, I always say police have more responsibility. So if we have to assign a pie chart, I will give them 60%, 40%, 75%, 25%, 65%, whatever. But they're trained, hopefully. They've gone to the police academy, hopefully. They've been sworn to protect and serve, hopefully. So they have the right to take my life and my liberty. That gives them more responsibility for de-escalation. That gives them more responsibility for professional police practices versus implicit bias versus excessive force. So we all have to take responsibility. And when I work with my young men in Memphis and Chicago and Florida, I tell them, listen, you have to be held accountable for your actions, for your words, and for your tone as well, because police are human beings. We all have bad days, and we all need to be mindful of the other person when we have this police encounter. So personally, I do not put all the blame on law enforcement. I put the majority of the blame and the majority of the responsibility on law enforcement.
And also, too, you become a creature of your environment. If you are in a, I'll play it on both sides here, too. If you're in a community which is vehemently anti-police, that's going to be a negative influence on you personally and mentally, emotionally. Same thing in a police station. If it's a anti-fill-in-the-blank race environment going on, well, guess what the result's going to be?
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know what's interesting? When we look at history of police and black community, I don't think the black community wholeheartedly say we don't like police. We don't like racially profiling police. We don't like unlawful abiding police. We don't like police brutality. Because when something happens, the first place we call is the police department. But we just don't want to be over-patrolled, overly incarcerated, things of that nature, drugs or whatnot planting on us. And we know that those things are happening, and they have happened, and they continue to happen. So I don't necessarily – there are some folk within the community who are just anti-police. I get that part. But I think the majority of the community is not anti-police, just like I believe the majority of law enforcement are good professional officers.
You have a program, it's called The New Conversation. Talk about the elements. What do you bring in to this conversation that helps people see things more factually, honestly, as opposed to any kind of emotions that could be blinding sometimes?
Sure. So The New Conversation stemmed from my book, The Stop, Improving Police and Community Relations. When I wrote The Stop, it was because my students literally, I was doing a workshop on the south side of Chicago, and I asked a group of 4th, 5th, and 6th graders, hey, if you're on the playground doing nothing wrong, minding your own business, if a police officer drove over, what would you do? And they said, run. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. Your response is going to create doubt, is going to create potential hardship for you. Why would you run? They said, I don't want to get shot. I don't want to be harassed. Or I don't want the police to stop me from going home. And so I knew there was a major problem when our babies are speaking this way. And so I had a police encounter soon thereafter that went viral, and I just felt in my spirit that God was saying, hey, you have to be a voice of reason because you respect law enforcement. Your father was a police officer. You wanted him to come home. You love your community. So someone has to be a voice of reason. So after working with different police departments, sitting in on different trainings, speaking to inner city youth, I realized, whoa, my focus in the book, The Stop, was more for telling young people this is how you have to engage, this is how you have to interact. But in listening to some of the police officers, for instance, one said, Mr. Bryant, thank you for this training because, you know, we've been forced to take a lot of DEI training and we just get tired of it. We're tired of hearing how bad we are and how racist we are. But he said, your presentation allowed me to humanize the black community. I said, really? He said, yeah, I used to walk behind black guys and say, hey, what about that arrest warrant? And if they run, I would chase them, lock them up, rough them up if I had to, and put them in jail. I said, well, let me ask you this question. What if they didn't have an arrest warrant and ran anyway? He said, it makes no sense to me. Why would they run if they didn't have an arrest warrant? I'm like, are you kidding me? Dude, many people are traumatized because of the same practices that you just told me you did, and now you're re-traumatizing, and then you're re-injuring. What if this man did not have a warrant? What if he had a family and children at home? What if their daddy didn't go home today? Now their daddy's locked up. Now daddy lost his job. Now daddy has to figure out how to get out of jail. Now mama got to take care of all the kids. Now the kids got to go to school angry, mad, and belligerent. Now daddy comes home. He's pissed off. He's telling the wife. He's hitting her. He's abusing her. All because one officer decided to play Super RoboCop. I said, do you understand the damage that you... He said, I never thought about it. I said, well, listen, brother. Thank you for sharing that story with me, but I need you to think about it. Not only do I need you to think about it, but I need you to tell your brothers in blue to think about it because they're creating more harm. They should be creating good in the community and not harm, and this is why so many people dislike you because some of the things that you're doing and expecting us to be okay with it.
If you're listening, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. So the new conversation now is engagement that I have with police and community, but now I'm equipped with more facts. There's been over 40,000 police officers that have been decertified for several egregious reasons. So now I understand, look, police officers, you guys are not this squeaky clean organization that you pretend to be. Let's all own up to our foolishness, police and community. Let's take responsibility and let's make our communities better so we can stop spending billions of dollars on police misconduct.
And it's really just a matter of, as Dwayne said, a single word, humanity. When we recognize that, and this is from both sides going in both directions, we find out that cooperation, understanding, coexistence, and maybe not love for each other, but certainly respect for each other, that could be something that could be achieved. And those are really the key elements that we see missing in case after case after case. So wouldn't it be a wonderful thing, instead of reacting to case after case after case, we create an environment where the next case is not going to happen because of that humanity, that respect, and that mutual understanding. So if you're a police department, a member of a police force, you want to find out more about the information, the education, the reality that Dwayne offers, DwayneBryant.com. Learn more as well about The Stop at aboutthestop.com. Dwayne Bryant, it's always an honor to bring to as many people's attention as I possibly can someone who has the capability and the track record of making a difference. You are one of those special people that makes they always want to say American exceptionalism. You're one of the elements of that American exceptionalism because you see what's broken, you see a problem, you come up with a solution, you fix what's broken. Thanks for doing that, for being here today.
Hey, Chris, my man, thank you so much, and thank you for all that you're doing. It was my honor, and I hope your guests have a different perspective, and let's make this better because it's a human problem, therefore it will require a human solution.